How can organizations unlock the full potential of every employee and team? The answer may be developing the right mindset. The idea of a growth mindset was popularized by psychologist Carol Dweck and generally applies to individuals. But Mary Murphy extends the concept to the group level in the new book, Cultures of Growth: How the New Science of Mindset Can Transform Individuals, Teams, and Organizations. Mary is a professor of psychological and brain sciences at Indiana University and founding director of the Summer Institute on Diversity at the Center for Advanced Study in the Behavioral Sciences at Stanford. In her book, she offers a blueprint for creating environments where learning, growth, and achievement can flourish. Here she is to share five of her big ideas.
Hi, I'm Mary Murphy. I'm a social psychologist, researcher, and professor at Indiana University and Stanford University, and I'm going to share some insights from my book, Cultures of Growth. What would it be like to live in a world where we felt engaged, motivated, and capable of doing our very best work? Where we're surrounded by people who deeply believe in our abilities to learn, grow, and develop, and actually support us to do that. That's a culture of growth. And for more than a decade, I've been doing research and working with families, schools, and companies to identify how we can build these environments in every context that matters to us, no matter our role. You've probably heard of the concept of the growth mindset, first developed by my PhD mentor, Dr. Carol Dweck, who also, by the way, wrote and recorded the foreword of my book. The growth mindset is a belief in continuous learning, that if we apply ourselves, seek help when we're stuck, and pursue good strategies, our ability to grow is essentially unlimited. Conversely, the fixed mindset is a belief that we're born with a relatively static set of innate skills and abilities. We either have it or we don't. Over the next several decades, mindset has become ubiquitous. As everyone from business leaders to coaches to teachers and parents have talked about the importance of having a growth mindset. The problem is that in some pretty important ways, we've gotten mindset wrong. I'm going to share with you five critical insights from my book that will resolve these misunderstandings and help you create cultures of growth that let you engage your growth mindset more often. Big insight number one, no one has a fixed or growth mindset. This is the good news and the bad news. It's that we all have both. If you Google fixed and growth mindset and look at the Google Images tab, you're going to see two heads, similar to what I see in posters on the walls of classrooms I visit, where the teachers say they teach growth mindset. These images often ask, what mindset do you have, fixed or growth? A pretty ironic and fixed way to think about the growth mindset, don't you think? The problem with this is that mindset isn't a dichotomy, and it isn't static. We don't have a fixed or a growth mindset. Instead, we all have both. Mindset actually exists on a continuum, and sometimes we operate more from our fixed mindset, while at other times we're operating from our growth mindset. How and when do we move along the mindset continuum between our fixed and growth mindset? That's the focus of my second insight. Insight number two. Knowing our mindset triggers and the triggers of those around us is critical to creating a growth mindset culture. Mindset triggers are the routine common situations we encounter that cause us to move between our fixed and growth mindset. Our research has identified four that predictably shift us along the mindset continuum. Almost everyone identifies with at least one or two, and if you're like me, you can see yourself in all four. The first mindset trigger is evaluative situations. Evaluative situations happen when we're taking part in an activity, like giving a presentation or pitching a new client, where we know we're going to be evaluated by others. In these situations, we can focus on proving and performing, where what matters most is how we come across to others and how smart people think we are, which is a more fixed-minded approach. In a culture where some have it and some don't, we want to prove we're one of the stars. However, we're not doomed to always shift to our fixed mindset by evaluative situations. We can turn this trigger into one that moves us toward growth by shifting into learning mode and adopting behaviors oriented towards development and growth. The second mindset trigger is high effort situations. High effort situations are those that require us to apply more effort, attention, or energy than we've ever had to apply before. In our fixed mindset, we might avoid stretch assignments that require us to master a whole new area or field for fear of falling short. In our growth mindset, we see the opportunity to develop, and we put in place supports to make sure that the effort we're expending is effective effort, really moving us toward our goal. The third mindset trigger is critical feedback. Now, instead of anticipating an evaluation by others, the verdict is in and we're being told, not good. Think a negative performance review. Ouch. If this is our fixed mindset trigger, we hear that feedback as a negative pronouncement on who we are and what we're capable of. We may even avoid feedback and tune out good strategies our boss is trying to give us. If it's our growth mindset trigger, we actively seek out and welcome critical feedback, understanding it's essential to learning. Perhaps we cultivate a growth mindset partner or pod who can help us consider the feedback and mine it for learning and strategies. The fourth and final mindset trigger is the success of others. This is when a peer achieves some level of success or wins the award you thought you'd get. If this is our fixed mindset trigger, we find ourselves demotivated or deflated, or we undercut their achievement. However, we can shift to growth by seeking to identify the strategies they use to see if there's some learning we can authentically implement for ourselves. All that said, as counterintuitive as it sounds, your mindset isn't only up to you. This brings me to the third insight of my book, which is that mindset isn't just in your mind. 23 years ago, I was a PhD grad student at Stanford University, where I had the opportunity to work with Carol Dweck. One day, I knocked on her office door to ask if I could discuss something with her. You see, I'd noticed and attended a series of seminars where students presented their work to professors, and there I saw something interesting. That the attitudes and behaviors of the professors had a massive impact on the students' performance. Specifically, it was clear that in one seminar, students felt pressure to perform, to prove how smart they were, that their ideas were worthy, to defend their ideas. And what happened to most students there? They choked. And then they avoided their work because revisiting it was simply too painful. While in the other, the focus was on helping students develop their ideas. These professors took a more collaborative approach, asking probing questions and brainstorming ways to improve the work, helping students grow their ideas. And the students left motivated and ready to dive into their work because they had some new strategies to try right away. As I thought about what was different about these two environments, I saw that these were two different ways we set up contexts that people think is motivating. One had the fixed mindset at its center, and the other was decidedly growth-minded. When I sat down with Carol, I told her about my experiences, and I asked her, is it possible that mindset isn't just in our minds? Meaning, could mindset exist outside of us, in the cultures we create and build? Could it be baked into what we say and do and how we interact with each other? And if so, wouldn't that significantly shape our experiences and motivation and performance and how well those groups perform in the long term? This kicked off more than a decade of research that has since confirmed that, in fact, some of the biggest influences on our personal mindset are outside our own heads. Every gathering of two or more people, whether we're with our kids, partners, friends, schools, coworkers, teams, or in our entire organization, every context has its own mindset culture, which influences our beliefs and behaviors. Depending on the nature of mindset culture, we may be more likely to shift into our fixed or our growth mindset when those four mindset triggers arise. The fourth big insight from my book is that genius isn't all it's cracked up to be. There are a few things our culture prizes more than a genius. You know what I mean, that person who seems to have been born with special skills or talents that make them seem almost destined to succeed. We believe that these stars are capable of doing things the rest of us simply can't, that they will make the biggest impact, devise the best solutions, and be the most effective leaders. But as it turns out, this genius mythology is exactly that, a myth. In fact, as my research shows, many who are labeled early on as geniuses fail to fully develop to their capacity. Similarly, schools that focus on identifying geniuses and companies that focus on acquiring geniuses, what I call cultures of genius, tend to underperform. These cultures aren't good for people or for organizations. The reason for this is that genius mythology is tightly interwoven with the fixed mindset, the belief that talent and ability is essentially static. You either have it or you don't. As a result, kids labeled early as gifted or employees crowned as stars are put on pedestals, and there's not much room to grow, learn, develop, or make mistakes. They become terrified of underperforming, of proving the label wrong, and so they may play it safe, afraid to truly stretch themselves for fear that they might fail. They may also hide their mistakes or, at worst, lie or cheat to maintain their status. Our narrow prototype of who and what a genius looks like and where they come from also causes us to overlook people who actually have tremendous capacity to succeed, but may be late bloomers or simply not adhere to that narrow societal prototype of who's smart. Did you know that billionaire entrepreneur Sarah Blakely didn't score high enough on her LSATs to get into law school? But while she didn't garner the grades to earn her genius status, Blakely had something better, a willingness and ability to engage her growth mindset and to build an environment around her that allowed that growth mindset to flourish. Her consistent focus on learning and continual improvement helped Blakely disrupt an entire market. Her own willingness to embrace failure in the process of advancement is also something she encourages among her employees. That's a hallmark of cultures of growth, where everyone is supported to learn and develop, and where failure and actively mining mistakes for learning and then sharing it broadly so it benefits everyone is considered essential to innovation. Finally, the fifth insight of my book is that everyone is a culture creator, and we can all build cultures of growth around us. Throughout the book, I share our latest research findings and stories from people and leaders I've worked with across industries. I show what fixed-minded cultures of genius look like and sound like, and how people have created and maintained sustainable cultures of growth that over and over again beat out cultures of genius, both for individuals and for teams, schools, and organizations. You'll see how companies and organizations like Microsoft, Patagonia, and Shell, as well as hundreds of early stage startups and entrepreneurs like the McBride sisters, who took their love affair with wine and grew it into the largest Black-owned wine company in the country by consistently building a culture of growth for each other. And you'll see how teachers, principals, and school systems, as well as colleges and universities throughout the country, create these inclusive cultures of growth in their classrooms where all students thrive. My book shows how everyone, regardless of their role, can be a culture creator, and how growth mindset cultures can transform any group, team, or classroom to innovate, collaborate, and reach breakthroughs, while also helping each individual person achieve their potential. Let's unlock our collective genius by building cultures of growth together. My book shows you how.
Thank you, Mary. That was Mary Murphy with five big ideas from Cultures of Growth, How the New Science of Mindset Can Transform Individuals, Teams, and Organizations. Also, check out our book bite for Carol Dweck's classic, Mindset, The New Psychology of Success. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.